copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
It's going to be a tour de force into Roman Catholic history, theology, worldview, present-day reality. So it's going to be, an interesting time. And I hope that in our discussion, some of the things that I will be only able to touch upon briefly will come up as discussion points to deepen our attention and reflection. We're going to have three sessions on a row up to the break, covering with a more general introduction, and then talking about Catholicism as a worldview and a system, because this is, I think, fundamental for us to appreciate. And then the first part of our morning session, first session, will end with a reflection on the importance of Vatican II, the Second Vatican Council, for present-day Catholicism. In the second part of our morning session, we will then deal with perhaps more practical topics like the issue of unity, Christian unity, Catholic unity, and the issue of how to reach out to Catholics with the gospel, and ending with a more of an historical as well as contemporary topic, whether or not the Reformation is over. That would be our end, the end of our seminar. So first of all, we don't have to be convinced to appreciate the importance of engaging Roman Catholicism. It's a global issue. Wherever you go in the world, north, south, east, west, the Catholic Church is there and has been there for a long time. Of course, the issue takes regional, national, cultural shades and colors, but because of the very nature of Catholicism, which is different but at the same time one, it can be dealt with as a whole. So it's a missiological issue, because wherever we go in the world, we find ourselves involved in dealing at different levels with the Catholic Church. It's a theological issue, because Roman Catholicism compels us to reflect upon the basics of the gospel, a basic historical understanding of the history of the Church, and compels us to reflect on what is essential, what is secondary, what is at stake with Catholicism as a whole. And for many of us also, it is a pastoral issue, because in our churches, congregations, and ministries, we often deal with people with Roman Catholic backgrounds or family members, and so in one way or another, this issue comes to us in different forms, but basically urging us to reflect upon what is really at stake. Let me begin by offering you a brief theological definition of Roman Catholicism taken as a whole. I know it's a complex issue and can be approached from different angles, different perspectives, different nuances, but this is a broad overall introductory definition of what we can say about Catholicism. And Roman Catholicism, of course, I take full theological responsibility for this definition. It won't be accepted by many observers, many analysts and thinkers, but that's the way I take it, and the whole morning will be an attempt to come back to this definition and to show degrees of consistency related to the contents and the thrust of this definition. It is basically a deviation from biblical Christianity. It's not just yet another form, neutral form, plausible form of Christianity, but it has fundamental flaws in terms of biblical Christianity. And our task is to see what is at stake in these deviations. Why have they taken place, and what was at stake in them taking place, and what are the outcomes of these deviations, not in peripheral issues only, but in the core elements of the Catholic understanding and practice of the gospel. It didn't come overnight. It didn't happen overnight. There is no birth date of Catholicism. It consolidated over the centuries, and that is part of its complexity. There is no birth date of Rome, the Roman Church. It is the result of a long process over the centuries, and this calls us to apply historical awareness, historical research, historical analysis when it comes to addressing the topic of Catholicism. By clustering around an imperial Roman institution, the key aspect of the development of Catholicism is the association with the Roman Empire, gradually taking the Roman imperial institutions, Roman imperial structures, the Roman imperial ideology, absorbing it and making it central to its own self-identity. So it was a gradual process of the Church becoming more and more like a religious empire, taking the place, replacing in many ways the Roman Empire, no longer in only political terms, but in religious, institutional, Christian terms. Centering on its sacramental system, once the Roman scheme, the Roman structure was assumed as the basic outlook of the Catholic Church, emphasis was given to the sacramental system with this newly founded or developed religious institution. And so Catholicism is largely defined by its reference to its sacramental system, forming the infrastructure, the theological infrastructure, and the ecclesiastical institutional infrastructure of the system, and grounding itself on its synergistic theology, leading to an abnormal ecclesiology. Catholicism's main problem is that it has developed an abnormal, inflated ecclesiology over against other core elements of the gospel, taking the place of supplementing and becoming a dominant feature of the Catholic self-understanding. It's an abnormal ecclesiology grown out of the absorption of Roman imperial self-understandings and becoming dominant in the overall system promoted by the Catholic Church. So you have a strong, abnormal, inflated ecclesiology dominating the scene. And in this process, it has also absorbed various pagan elements, making room for practices, devotions that were part of the preceding religious landscape. And with this approach, with this imperial type of approach, as the Roman Empire was able to absorb other religions in terms of finding room for the new religions of conquered peoples, the imperial outlook of the Catholic Church made it possible for it to absorb elements that were not peculiarly or particularly integral or part of the Judeo-Christian root of the Christian faith, but were added to that mainstream Judeo-Christian religion. And being fueled by its universal Catholic project of embracing the whole world. Again, another aspect absorbed by and from the Roman Empire was this imperial outlook, of course, matched with the a Christian language of mission to the whole world, but interspersed with this imperial political idea of dominion and embracement of the whole world to be taken under the authority of the institutional church. So that is a definition that emphasizes the process of the Catholic Church becoming something quite different from the early patterns of biblical Christianity and being elevated to the dominant features of Roman Catholic Christianity, to the point of becoming what the Catholic Church has been promoting over the centuries. So Roman Catholicism retains significant theistic Christian elements. So this process of absorption was not something that totally replaced Christian elements. And so we have to appreciate the fact that significant theistic Christian elements are retained, like, you know, the Trinity, for instance, the doctrine of the Trinity, and Christian morality. Yet because of its blurred theological system, it departs from biblical Christianity at all points in different ways and degrees of intensity, resulting in a confused and distorted religion at the very core. So there is a sense in which the Trinity, the Christological outlook of the Christian faith, of course, was officially, formally retained, but because of elements that took place within the Catholic Church, while at the formal level, while at the official level, the Trinitarian Creed is professed, the Christological faith is taught, but at the same time, there are elements within the system that practically undermine the Trinitarian Christological framework of the Christian faith. Mariology, for instance, is just an example of what it means for the Catholic Church to be at the same time committed to the Trinitarian Christological faith, and yet having developed a whole stream of theological reflection and spirituality leading away from Trinitarian and Christological aspects of the Christian faith. Once you have a whole spirituality centered on Mary, that practically deviates from the Nicene Creed and the Trinitarian pattern of the faith, whereby people are encouraged to pray to other submediators, and therefore undermining the fact that in Christ, the God-man, we have the only mediator that can lead us to the Father. And also it implies a diminished role of the Spirit, whereby if we have to go to Mary or to the saints in order to approach God, not only we diminish the role of Christ as the mediator, we only diminish the role of the Spirit as being the link, the bond, leading us to the Son, the mediator, who leads us to the Father. So formally, there are theistic Christian fundamental elements which are retained, but then practically there are elements that run contrary to that Trinitarian Christological Orthodox pattern. And the end result is that it is a mixed and distorted religion. And this is part of what it makes Catholicism a complex topic to address, because you can see it from different angles, but our attempt will be to try to look at it as a whole, as a system. Let me talk about a biblical pattern whereby we can at least begin to see what is at stake with the Roman Catholic Gospel. You all know the passage by the Apostle Paul in the Second Corinthians chapter 1 and verses 12 to 22, where Paul uses the language according to which his preaching was not based on an yes and no approach or response to the gospel. You remember the criticism that he had received by some circles within the Corinthian church, criticizing his having to change his mind over his missionary planning, and therefore having to change his missionary itinerary. And the criticism went further than just questioning the ability of the Apostle Paul to plan his own journey by undermining his apostolic authority. So the critics would say, look at this man, he is not able to plan his own journey. How is it possible that he is a reliable apostle? He is totally unreliable. He cannot plan his journey. His preaching was and is unreliable. Now Paul, he understands that the criticism is not so much about his planning abilities. He will try to explain why he had to change his plans. But he understands that the critics would actually want to undermine his apostolic credibility, the apostolic authority of his message. And therefore, he comes with this message, with this language: what I preached to you was not a yes and no at the same time, was not an ambivalent, was not an ambiguous, was not a partial agreement with the gospel. It was a full yes to the glory of God, a full yes in response to the person and work of Jesus Christ. And my message has always been a full, integral, radical, simple, clear yes. Now this language helps us to understand what is at stake with Catholicism, at least as I understand it. There are elements of the Catholic gospel which are both committed to yes and no elements to the gospel. There are elements which are retained and reflect the yes elements of the gospel, whereby the person and the work of Christ, the historical person of Christ and his work, are affirmed. But at the same time, at the very fundamental level, there are no elements to the gospel, no responses to the gospel that make the synthesis, the Catholic synthesis, always a blurred answer, never a full yes, never a full no, but always a combination of yes and no elements to the gospel. There is, of course, the confession of Orthodox Christology, but at the same time, the pushing of non-Orthodox Christological trends by way of encouraging the veneration, the hyper-veneration of Mary, the veneration of the saints, and by way of understanding the very nature of the Church as the prolongation of the incarnation of Christ in a sacramental mood. In this breaking away from the clear boundaries of the time of the incarnation, the Catholic Church is both committed to Orthodox Christology, but also committed to a blurred Christology. And the same is true as far as the Trinity. Formally, it is affirmed, the doctrine of the Trinity is affirmed, but then practically, for most Catholics, what makes more sense for them is their relationship with Mary and the saints than with Jesus and the Spirit. And once you have this coming out of the official teaching, coming as an outcome of what the Catholic Church believes and teaches, you have a problem in the system. It's not just an unexpected outcome. It is an integral, expected outcome for people not to have a Trinitarian-shaped faith, but something that is quite different. The same is true as far as the commitment of the Church to the Bible. There is a yes element. The Bible is read. The Bible is venerated. The Bible is obeyed, but at the same time, there is no element whereby the tradition of the Church, the magisterium of the Church, they are all voices which determine the way in which the Bible is believed. And in very important aspects of Catholic theology, it is not the Bible informing and shaping Catholic teaching. It is more the traditions of the Church and ultimately the magisterium of the Church. So it's not a yes or no, it's a yes and no at the same time. When it comes to salvation, of course, there is the affirmation of the necessity of God's grace and the reliance on God's grace, but at the same time there is this strong emphasis on the fact that without approaching God's grace through the sacramental system and without performing good works, God's grace in and of itself is not the sufficient ground for salvation. Yes and no. Of course there is the worship of Christ and of God, the triune God, but at the same time much of Catholic spirituality is shaped by other forms of veneration. So thoroughgoingly we see this pattern going on at all the times and at very fundamental levels in every area of doctrine, in every area of spirituality. Yes and no. Now, we all grapple with this tension. I don't think there is any one of us who is fully committed to the yes elements of the gospel and can in conscience say that he or she is not influenced by the temptation to also affirm the no elements to the gospel. We all struggle to be faithful. We all struggle to purify our response to the gospel in order to make it more and more similar to a yes alone response. So I'm not saying that outside of the Catholic Church we don't have this problem. We all have this problem. And we all have degrees of absorption of no elements. The problem with the Catholic Church is that because of its dogmatic outlook and its dogmatic commitments, it is practically difficult, if not impossible, for the Church to change the overall synthesis. It's not a Church committed to be always reforming in the sense of being serious about reforming very basic convictions and very basic teachings. Of course, the Catholic Church has a language of reform, of inner renewal, but not at the expense of breaking the dogmatic synthesis that makes the Catholic Church what it is. By committing itself to dogmas like the two recent Marian dogmas, 1854, dogma of the Immaculate Conception of Mary, 1950 Marian dogma of the bodily assumption of Mary, the 1870 dogma of papal infallibility, the dogmas proclaimed by the Council of Trent against justification by faith alone. These are all dogmatic commitments that are signs of the unwillingness of the Catholic Church to go deeper in its inner renewal. The inner renewal of the Catholic Church always lies within the synthesis, but never breaks away from this at a very fundamental level. So all of us need to deal with the challenges of having a not purified response to the gospel, but we all need to be open to the transforming power and action of the Holy Spirit through God's Word that will enable us to move forward in our response and making it more and more or closer and closer to a yes alone response. Some of the common misconceptions about present-day Catholicism. This is something that we often hear. A spiritual renewal is occurring. And it is evident that this is the case. There are many movements within the Catholic Church that are showing signs of a degrees of renewal. The Catholic Church has always been the home of different renewal movements within the Catholic Church. So it's not only a recent phenomena, but perhaps In recent decades, this phenomenon is more evident. Yes, that's true, and we should celebrate at least part of what it means for some of these renewal movements to be impactful within the Catholic Church, but it is happening in all directions. The system is not renewing itself only in the, let's say, evangelical direction, Bible-based, gospel-centered direction. It is a system that is renewing itself in all directions. It is a living body that is knowing a season of renewal at every level. The traditional movements wanting to go, you know, deeper into the traditional outlook of the church, there are renewal movements there. Stronger, growing movements. There are liberationist movements wanting, you know, the church to embrace tendencies, ideological tendencies, political influences, closer to the cries, the needs of the poor, and implementing reforms that would transform the church into a more democratic, horizontal type of structure. There are folk religion movements wanting to reinforce the commitment of the church to folk religion, folk practices, spiritual disciplines shaped by folk religion. There, Marian movements are on the rise. They are renewing Marian practices, Marian traditions, and Marian devotions. There is a charismatic movement that is only one of many renewal movements within the Catholic Church. So, spiritual renewing is occurring, but we need to be aware that this renewal is taking place across the board of Catholicism. The system is renewing itself in all directions. And so, this is not to be taken as a one-sided, positive observation, but the system is expanding in all of its components, absorbing all kinds of trends without losing its basic outlook and its universal scope. There is a common creedal basis. That's another often repeated comment, and that is of course true. The Nicene, the Trinitarian Christological heritage of the early church is our common basis, and this is of course true. Yet we have to think about a distinction between what is formally true and what is practically the case. There are some fundamental breaches in the doctrine of Christ, not only as far as some peripheral elements of the faith are concerned. The whole Catholic inflated ecclesiology is fueled by a Christological understanding of the Church being the prolongation of the Incarnation. The whole Mariological body of doctrines is largely dependent on a Christological breach, and making that Christological consensus formally true and yet at the same time practically problematic. The doctrine of revelation, we agree that Christ is the revelation of God, but for the way the Catholic Church understands it, means that the living voice of Christ can be heard in the ongoing present day magisterium of the Church. And so making that common confession something that formally can be recognized but needs to be understood more deeply and seen in its problematic outcomes. Salvation, of course, we all agree along the lines of the Apostles' Creed and the early heritage of the Church, but the way in which it is then worked out, Catholic soteriology is worked out, shows that there are significant degrees of problematic problems in the way in which basic understandings of Christ, the church, the work of Christ, are apprehended and worked out in terms of their soteriological dimensions. So it can be argued that the common basis in at times more superficial than real. And the basic doctrinal system is committed to different poles, not the yes only attempt to respond faithfully to the gospel, but the yes and no attempt to include, absorb, integrate yes and no elements to that response. Another important distinction that is often heard is that we deal with individual Catholics. This is especially true for, you know, missionary practitioners. We're not dealing with the institution, we're dealing with individual people, and that is true. Not every Catholic is fully aware of where the church stands and what the church believes. There are degrees of appropriation of Catholic belief and practice within Catholicism. There are different Catholics, different types of Catholics, different ways of Catholics to be Catholics. And yet, the Roman Catholic institution is always involved because the Catholic faith is always social, sacramental, and linked to its full theological vision. There may be people who are not as coherent with the whole of the Catholic teaching. But because of the nature of the Catholic faith, that is always social, never individualistic, always sacramental, the relationship between the individual and the institution cannot be simply overlooked. And of course there are different ways of approaching different people and appreciating the fact that not all Catholics are fully aware of the whole of the Catholic theological system, but at the same time, believing that individuals are isolated atoms detached from the overall picture is another simplistic type of understanding. So, as you think about it, let me conclude this first session by looking at the two biblical paradigms whereby we can approach Catholicism. And I'm not, you know, saying that one is over against the other, but I think that the way in which we approach Catholicism lies behind these two paradigms. On the one hand, Galatians 1, where Paul deals with a kind of teaching that was taught in the Galatian churches. And even though it seemed to be close to the gospel, even though it was morally motivated, and it had a certain extent of overlap with the biblical gospel, Paul comes to the point of saying, this is an other gospel. Similar language, overlapping concerns, points of convergence as far as the basic understanding of theism, Judaic theism, and an appreciation of the person and work of Christ, but at some fundamental points so different that Paul is enabled and entitled to say this is another gospel. Or the Philippians 1 paradigm, where Paul is dealing with people around him, criticizing him, blaming him, slandering him, and yet Paul recognizes that they preach Christ. And if they do so, he rejoices for it. So he's aware of these two main, let's say, frameworks on how to deal with people who are outside close circles of friendship and ecclesiastical belonging. One paradigm recognizes that in spite of some similarities, there are differences that make it possible to say that it's a different gospel, or in spite of the fact that there have been misunderstandings, that there have been painful events, that there are caricatures that go on, yet the preaching of the gospel is the same, and so it's a reason to rejoice. I think Catholicism needs to be approached in one or the other, or maybe that's the exact question that we have in our mind. How do we have to approach it biblically? Is it a Galatians 1 situation, or is it a Philippians 1 situation?